Yes, we're going to begin now perhaps the most relevant lemaisa part of the halachas of ribbis, and that's how to get around some of the halachas of ribbis, how to circumvent the sum of ribbis, and that's of course the concept of the heter iska. So we began a little bit of introduction at the end of the shiur last week. Let's just pick up from there. The concept of a heter iska per se, as we practice it today, doesn't really appear in the Gemara. It's something that was introduced much, much later. It's based on principles that appear in the Gemara, and primarily the principle of what's called an iska. The sugya of iska does appear in the Gemara. It actually appears in a Mishnah, and then the Gemara elaborates upon it. There's the principle of an iska. An iska basically means a business investment. So I give you money, and you go ahead and invest in whatever you want to invest in, and we are equal partners. So the Gemara says that iska is palga milva paga pikadon. It's understood when I give you money to invest, so I'm going to share equally in the profits, and I'm going to share equally in the losses as well. If it's understood that it's going to be 50-50, unless it's spelled out to the contrary. So this idea of an iska, this concept of an iska that exists in halacha, can potentially become helpful in terms of avoiding some issues of ribbis. So what would the halacha be is as follows. I come to you and I say, I'm about to open a business, I need $50,000, and you're more than willing to lend me the $50,000 at whatever, X percent of interest. So obviously that's prohibited. But what if we say as follows? Rather than me paying you X amount of money as interest, what if I make you investing partner in this particular business? So as a partner who's investing in the business, you're obviously going to be entitled to some of the profit. And just lo and behold, we happen to say that the profit that I'm going to give you, your share of the profit, is going to be just exactly that amount of quote-unquote interest that you would have otherwise been expecting. So if you would have lent the money to a non-Jew, so you would have gotten back, I don't know, 8%, whatever it is, 8% interest. So we'll call the profits 8% of what I'm borrowing from you, so we're going to call that the profits instead. So that's in theory what heter iska is all based on, that rather than viewing it as just a regular loan, we incorporate into the loan a business investment, and as such, since part of the money is still belonging to the original person, so he is in fact legally entitled to part of the profits. That's the bare form, so to speak, the basic structure of what heter iska is all about. But there are a lot of edges that have to be smoothed out in order for this to work. So there are two fundamental problems when you set up this kind of a setup. Let's say I come to you and I want to borrow X amount of money, and not just I'm not borrowing it, but rather I'm investing it, and you are becoming my partner in 50-50. So if you go into this kind of an agreement, a 50-50, so then obviously you're only going to be entitled to profits if there really is profit. What if I borrow the money, I quote-unquote invest the money, and we're partners 50-50, and the whole business goes down the tubes? So then, in theory, you're going to get nothing back. So if the whole idea of a heter iska is that you're only getting money, only b'toras profit, not b'toras ribbis, so then that's very nice and dandy if the business goes up. But if the business doesn't go up, if I don't make enough money, or if I lose money, so then that's going to be a problem. You're never going to get your profit, i.e. your ribbis. So no one's going to want to give that money. The whole point is, you're not interested in investing in my business. You're interested in getting your 8% return on your loan. So obviously, if we have to figure out some way to ensure that you get your quote-unquote profits, even though the profits don't actually take place. So that's one very serious issue in terms of heter iska. The second issue of heter iska is even worse, that a person would never want to invest in such a thing. Forget about I'm not making sufficient profits. What if he loses everything? So I give you $100,000 to open up your store. You open up your store, 6 months later, the store's gone, everything's gone, nothing. You have nothing to speak of. So you're going to turn around to me and you're going to say, well, I'm sorry, you invested and you lost. I say, wait a second, the whole point was I was supposed to be sure that I'm going to make my money back. That was the point of ribbis, is that ribbis means I lend you $100,000, I don't care what happens to your money, I'm going to get back the original money and I'm going to get back the interest. So nobody's going to enter into such an agreement. We're just going to call it a plain, simple iska. We're just going to say that I'm hereby giving you $100,000. That's not fully as a loan. It's half loan. It's half bikadon. And you're going to give me X amount of the profits. So we want to make sure that those profits exist. I want to be absolutely certain, just about as absolutely certain as I can, that those profits exist. And number two, I want to make sure that if the principal gets lost, I'm still going to get reimbursed. So what we do is as follows. There are two different ways to get around these two problems. So one way to get around these problems is to say as follows, that We're entering into an agreement, and it's an iska type of an agreement. It's a 50-50, and true, I will only be reimbursed the profit if, in fact, there is profit. Yes, that's true. And as an equal partner, a 50-50 partner in this investment, I will lose my share if something goes wrong with the investment. Yes, that's true. But who's going to inform me, who's going to testify that whether or not there was profit, and who's going to inform me whether or not there was a loss? What, you're going to tell me? I'm going to trust you? Well, I don't trust you. I don't believe you. I'm going to insist on a very, very high burden of proof that exactly how much profit was there, and I'm going to insist on a very, very high burden of proof for you to get off the hook and say, sorry, there's no profit whatsoever, and opposite is true, that we lost the entire principal. So I have a right to make whatever agreement I want. If you enter into the agreement with me, din imonos, we can do whatever we want. So I'm going to put into this contract demanding a very, very high level of proof. It may be so high, it may be almost impossible for you to actually fulfill that level. Not totally impossible, but almost impossible, very, very difficult for you to reach that level of proof. What possible levels of proof can I demand from you? So I have one of two options. Either I could demand from you that I insist that you take a shvua. You're going to come, I insist that I don't trust you to say that what the amount of profit was. I don't trust you to say that the money was lost. I'm insisting that you come to Beis Din and you take a shvua, with a sefer Torah, whatever, in front of 10 people, whatever condition I want to make. I insist that you take a shvua, and then and only then am I going to trust you. Then and only then am I going to accept your word. Now we're dealing with from people who don't like to take shvuas, rightfully so. So the odds that the person is going to take a shvua is highly unlikely. Or what if I come up with another etza, another way to make absolutely certain that I'm going to get back what I want? I say to you like this, listen, I'm sorry, I like you very much, we're good friends, but in the realm of $100,000, so that's where our friendship ends. I want to make sure that you're really telling the truth. I insist that you produce two kosher edim and Beis Din who are going to testify exactly how much profits were made. I want two edim to tell me exactly what the loss was. I'm not going to take your word for it. I insist on having two edim. You're going to go have two edim who are going to know what happened. You're going to have two edim and lend you $100,000 to open up a pizza store. So you're going to have two edim who are going to sit there for the next 6 months counting how many pizzas you sold, counting how much money you made. They're going to make a cheshbonus. So it's not realistic. It's not shayach. It could happen. In theory, you have nothing. You find two guys have nothing to do. They can sit in and tally up how many pizzas you sold and how many french fries you sold. But it's highly unlikely that's going to happen. So I say, listen, it's my money. I'm entering into a business with you. I'm only going to accept your word if you're able to produce edim. So I can come up with these very innovative ways of, in effect, putting you into a corner that you have no nemanos, that you're not going to be able to be believed to say what you lost, what you didn't lose, what you gained, what you didn't gain. So how is this all going to play out? So now I say to you as follows. I say, listen, you know, rather than forcing you to come up with these very difficult ways of being mavara what the reality was, I'll give you another option. You know what the other option is? Let's set what we think is a reasonable amount of profit. It means you can make a cheshbon. We suspect that I give you $100,000, you can open a pizza store, you know there are only six other stores on the same block, so you'll make good money on it, okay? We'll try to make a cheshbon. And over the course of the next 3 years, we can guess that you'll probably make X amount of profit. Again, it may be a little more, maybe a little bit less, but I don't trust you to give me the details unless you come with your Aiden, with your Shavua, whatever the case may be. So I say to you, rather than, you know, driving you crazy to make you come with your aid, let's set an amount that we think is fair, b'tchila, and we're going to call that the profit. To the contrary, that will be the X amount of profit. How much is that profit? We can set whatever we want. So now I start to think. Well, if I would have lent this money without an iska, just to a regular, to a non-Jew, I would have asked them for, I would say, 8% of interest over the next 3 years. So I say to my Jewish fellow, I say, you know what? Let's call the profit. We'll take just some arbitrary number. 8%. That sounds like a pretty good amount. That's probably going to be the profit, give or take. And you're not going to have any net minus otherwise. So, sure, we'll set it at 8%. And if you give me the 8%, I won't pester you. We'll part as friends. And sure, and that will be my set amount in terms of profit. So that's basically what an iska does. So what an iska fundamentally does is, at the risk it fundamentally does, is it takes what was otherwise a loan, turns it into a part loan and part pikadon, chatzi mil v'chatzi pikadon, as we said last week, which entitles the person who's investing the money to some degree of the profit, and sends 50% of the profit. It also puts the investing partner at risk that if the whole principle gets lost, so he has to suffer half the loss also. That's all true. But it puts these two safeguards into the agreement that basically protect the interest of the person who's giving the money. It protects his interest, no pun intended on the word interest, but it protects his interest in the sense that he's going to get his share of the profits no matter what, and that share of the profits is going to be exactly what he would otherwise have gotten for a loan, for interest as a loan. Of course, we cannot mention the word ribbis in this contract. That would be undermine the validity of the contract. And in addition, it protects him by making sure that the guy's not going to pull a stunt and say that, sorry, there's nothing left, the whole pizza store was a flop, and I don't have any money to show, and I lost the principal, and therefore you have to suffer half the losses. Because basically, what the person who gave the money is saying is that I'm not going to believe you unless you come up with X, Y, and Z proof, which is going to be very difficult to do. So that's the basic theory of what an iska is. So if you take a look, at the introduction, this shtar iska, I made a couple of copies floating around. So if you take a look, when it gives you the introduction, so it tells you Jewish religious law strictly prohibits the paying receiving interest. Okay, that we know. Money's into the course of a business transaction. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. What are some of the limitations on the iskas? But an agreement, in the end of the second line, an agreement may be entered into whereby the provider and receiver of these funds are considered equal partners. So that's exactly what we said last week in the Gemara, that milva chatzi pikadon. This partnership is based upon the stipulation that upon request, every loss must be attested to a little small spelling mistake. It should be two with a T there, not T-W-O. But I didn't write this document. You take it up with the Beis Din. Every loss must be attested to by two trustworthy witnesses and all profits verified by oath. Now, when I was presenting it to you, so I said you have either or option in terms of putting a very serious burden of proof upon the person. So the minik is that when it comes to proving what the loss is, so we insist on to aid him. When it comes to proving what the profits are, so then we suffice with having a shvua. Now, in theory, one could have flipped it too. In theory, one could have had either one for either one of these two cases. The reason why this has become the general practice is as follows, that to insist on Edim is going to be perhaps even harder than insisting on a Shavua. To insist on a Shavua, so the guy's a real knacker, so that he may really take the Shavua. So again, we're assuming he probably won't. He's from, it's very unlikely he's going to want to take a Shavua. Even a Shavua's Emes is very unlikely going to want to take, but he could theoretically take it. But she ain't going to find Edim who are going to be able to testify in every single detail of this business for the last 10 years is even less likely. So the highest level of proof is to Edim. So Shnei Edim Vitar, even a Shavua. Means Edim, that's the greatest level. So when it comes to protect me from the loss, so then I have a right to insist that I want the absolute highest level of Bira whatsoever. No questions asked, because I don't want to suffer a loss. I'm being a nice guy. So to protect myself against the loss, I have a right to demand the highest possible level of Bira. Just to make sure that I get my profit, so then it's not appropriate for me to insist on the highest possible level of Bira. The next rung is also okay in terms of asking for a Shavua. I mean, either one would really be good. We don't want to ask for too high a level of Bira, because if you ask for too high a level of Bira, it looks a little bit like a chukotlu. It looks a little bit like a joke that I'm not giving the guy any way whatsoever. If the contract is written in such a way that it totally ties the hands of the managing partner, of the person who's getting the money, so then the whole thing is a farce, and it's just like he's just paying me money between his ribbons. So I want to give him that out. I want to give him the ability to potentially be ne'eman. So when it comes to protecting me from a loss, it's okay to ask for a higher level of biror. When it comes just to protect myself to get my profit, so then we try to formulate a little bit lower level. Again, me'ikra than either one would probably be okay, but that's the way, over the last couple hundred years, that's the way it's developed, that we split those two different levels of birurim. So again, what we're setting up is this chatzi milva chatzi pikadon, and we're giving the person who's receiving the money the option to take the shvuas, the option to bring edim, etc. All consequent profits and losses are then equally shared. However, in order to continue the introduction, in order to avoid these very stringent requirements, which is going to be very difficult to do, so the provider of the funds under the shtar iska agrees to waive his share of the profits in lieu of receiving a fixed percentage of the money advanced. So we set X amount as the money that I'm going to take as what we're guessing is the profit is going to be. This percentage is then considered profit rather than interest on a loan. So that's the...
Why on the loss don't we say the same thing? Why do we need the stricter requirement if at the end of the day you're not giving him that option anyway.
Right, so, well, we... At a loss, in theory, the guy may take a shvuah. But give him the lower level in terms of the shvuah.
Disallowing him from taking the shvuah.
No.
He could, in theory, he but could. We're saying in place of that...
No, we're saying that if he chooses not to take the shvuah, so that in order to avoid these very stringent commandments, so then he agrees to waive his shvuah in lieu of receiving...
Does that mean he has the option to?
Yeah, absolutely. The lower has the option to. Right.
So if he loses all his money, he can now come and say... Yeah. Even if you have a heter isker, then basically what you're saying is that right. The guy can take a shvuah and then... You could lose your money anyway.
Right, assuming that he's going to want to take a shvuah, right? So there, so that's what some poskim say, that if you're nervous that you're dealing with a person who may be a little bit of a kanakra, take a shvuah, so make the shvuah a little bit more chomer. So right into the heteriska, I insist that he takes a shvuah, holding his hand on a sefer Torah in front of the entire shul, and make it in a way that he's probably not going to want to do it.
Why can't you just ensure that the principal, that's not interesting?
No, but I want to make money on this.
But at least... Second example, when the business goes down, I won't get anything, but to ensure in writing that at least I'll get my principal back.
So then it's a loan. Then you have no right to collect the profit. The only thing that gives me a right to collect profit is the fact that it's partially not a loan, it's partially a pikadon. So if I'm too machped on making sure that I get my principal back under every single possible circumstance, so then it's a junk, then it's not a chatzi pikadon, then it's a kulam milva, then I have no right to get any interest. Any profit that I'm going to make is going to be b'toras interest. Okay? So again, so that's the basic structure, the introduction of it. And then we could just see it just play out in terms of the agreement itself. We could read through quickly. So I, the undersigned, have received from the other person the sum of X amount of money, repayable of X amount of years, for the purpose of transacting business connection with, to write out what the business is. We'll see as we go on why we try to use heter iskas only for business-oriented loans. So as agreed, in lieu of such sharing of profits and losses, which would require substantiation of the loan of all losses by two trustworthy witnesses, verification of all profits by oath, you shall accept my payment of an annual percentage of X amount of the said sum of and waive all those profits. Sure. And then if you see I have received a token payment of $1, that goes back to what we spoke about last week, that you can't set up an iska because every iska, by definition, is a ribbis problem. Here we're trying to set up an iska to avoid a ribbis problem. The very institution of an iska is a ribbis problem because I'm lending you money, at least part of it, 50% is a loan, and you're working on the money for me. You're doing all the work. You're sweating and baking pizzas for me, and I'm making part of the profit. So how could you work for me in lieu of the fact that I gave you a loan? So that's what the Gemara, the Mishnah says in Bava Metzia, that I have to pay you for your services. I don't have to pay you so much. It's not ribbis d'araisa, it's a ribbis d'rabbanan, so I have to give you some token payment. So how much is that token payment? So the minig is, we say in the last line, I've received a token payment of $1 from the sederam for my efforts in connection with this undertaking, right, for baking the pizzas, and I've signed with the receipt of the said X amount, $1. He signed it, and the person who receives the money signs it, because he's the one who's being mishabed himself, he's obligating himself to pay back the X amount of profits. So this is the basic tzura of a heter iska. There are a few important issues and a few possible limitations on what a heter iska can accomplish. There is an issue that some posts can raise with a heter iska, is that it's not realistic in terms of the amount of profit. Now, I want to make sure that I'm going to get basically the amount of money that I would have gotten if I would have lent money to a non-Jew. So if I want to make sure that I get 8%, whatever the number is, so what we're basically saying is that if I'm going to get 8%, we're guessing, we're making an estimation that this business is going to bring in 16%, for argument's sake. Because again, we're really splitting the profits equally. That's the whole point. Chatzim over chatzim pikadon. So we're going to make this arbitrary number called 8%, and I'm going to say I'm going to get 8%, which is implying that the business is really bringing in 16%. Now, what if we know that's not going to happen? This is the seventh pizza store in town. We know it's most probably not going to halavai to bring in 8%. So how can you write iska in such a way that, we're guessing, we're making an intellectual guess that's going to bring in X amount of money, then you have to double that amount. You have to double that amount of money because I'm only getting half of it. So some poskim had issues with that. So to solve that dilemma, some poskim came up with a little bit of a different twist of a heter iska, what's called the kulo pikadon form. So a standard heter iska that's been practiced for hundreds of years is what we call chatzi milvin chatzi pikadon. Half of it is presented as a loan, half is presented as a pikadon. So in the chelik of the loan, the person who's baking the pizzas makes the money. The chelik of the pikadon, the person who invested the money makes the pizza. And it makes the pizza, makes the profit. So yeah, the pizza's too focused on the pizza now. So what if we turn the whole thing into a pikadon? I say to you, listen, I'm not lending you a penny. I'm giving you money totally and completely as a to watch for me. And I'm giving you the right to use that money, to invest that money, but that money is totally mine. I'm going to be entitled to all of the profits. And then we have to spell out in such a way that I'm not going to suffer all the losses, and in case there's no profit, I'm still going to get my X amount because I don't trust you. You have to go through the same pizman as we went in a regular Tariska, but just pull out the half halva out of the picture. What do you gain by pulling out half of the halva out of the picture? So then, even if the business doesn't bring in 16%, I'll still get 8%. We can say that with an honest appraisal. We can say it intellectually honest. Even if the business only brings in 8%, so I'll get that whole 8% because it's kula pikadon. The money that's being invested is totally my money. So if you have a type of business that you're afraid you're not going to make all that much money, you're afraid that it's going to be unrealistic to say that half of my profit is going to be what I really want the money to be. So some posts can recommend using a kula pikadon form instead. The downside of a kula pikadon form is that it looks very unrealistic for another reason. It means when do we find such a thing that I give a guy money, and the money is totally mine, and he has basically nothing to gain out of it, and he's going to do all this business for me. Like, why? Why should he do that? Bishlam, if it's a chatzi mil, b'chatzi pikadon, so then it looks like a business deal. Then it makes sense. I'm putting up the money, you're doing the work, he's getting half the profit, I'm getting half the profit, I get half the loss, he gets half the loss. It looks a little bit more realistic. A pikadon looks like a chuchot lula. Nobody ever does such a thing. So that's what some poskim didn't like, the kula pikadon forms, for that reason. The minig is that we usually use the standard form. This is the classic form of the shtar heter. It's been used for hundreds of years. The chatzi mil v'chatzi pikadon. There are certain circumstances where maybe the pikadon form should be used instead. But by and large, we're going to be focusing on this kind of a form, the classic traditional shtar hetariska of chatzi mil v'chatzi pikadon. There are a few important technical issues that come up in terms of hetariska, certain possible limitations on using a hetariska. And one is, what was pointed out over here, if you looked at back to the second line, an introduction, when monies are advanced in the course of a business transaction, that the idea of Atariska was instituted by the Acharonim to enable people to be able to do business with one another, to be able to lend people money in order to open up businesses. What if the loan that I'm giving you is a personal loan? You're not going to do anything with it. I know exactly what you can do with the money. You owe somebody else $100,000. So you need $100,000 to pay off a debt. You need money to pay off your electric bills. You need money to pay off your credit card. You need money for other things. You're not investing the money in anything. So can we write ahead the risk for that kind of a loan? So I'm going to lend you $10,000 because you need the money to pay whatever you need. So how could you call that heterisk? It's mamash a joke. We're going to write and we're going to sign a document that says that we're going to stipulate that all the profit that's coming in, so we're going to, instead of paying you b'taras ribbis, it's going to be paid b'taras profit. What profit? There is no profit. There's no investment in the first place. So can you write heterisk under those circumstances? So the pashas advarim is that you cannot. The pashas pshad is that heterisk only makes sense, the whole concept only makes sense when you're writing it b'toras a business investment. If you're writing it b'toras personal loan, so then the whole thing is a joke. The whole thing is a chuchot lulu. That's the pashas advarim. However, there are certain circumstances where we can maybe even stretch a little bit what the definition of a business type of a loan is all about. So the post can discuss about the following shiloh, what a very, very common shiloh. I want to borrow money from somebody to buy a house. So is that considered to be a business or is that considered to be a personal loan? So it depends how real estate is going. So very often people buy real estate as an investment. So even though it may be this is the house that I'm going to live in, it may have a dual purpose. It may be a personal loan, I need a house to live in. On the other hand, it's an investment. So the price will go up in a couple of years, I'll sell it and buy another house. So the post can make on that. If you live in a place where real estate fluctuates and people view buying real estate as an investment, so then one can argue that you can call that a quote-unquote business transaction and there may be profits involved. So I'll buy the house for $500,000 and then in 2 years from now it'll be $700,000. So that was a $200,000 profit. And we'll figure it out. We'll figure out what the rate of interest should have been that you wanted to collect from me. We'll reframe it, restructure it. Rather than calling it interest, we'll call it part of the profit insurance. So the same way that you invested in my pizza store, you're investing in my real estate transaction. So Poskim and Mako. In Europe, they used to be machmer in this, because this is what the Poskim in America write, that in Europe, they used to be machmer in this 100 years ago, because real estate generally wasn't considered to be such a big investment. Again, I don't know too much about buying real estate in Poland, but apparently then people didn't consider that to be a major investment. So then it was more of a personal loan, they used to be machmer. It's in America, so people are, many Poskim are making on this. Then the Poskim today discussed the following type of a shiloh. Let's say I'm taking out a personal loan, but the reason why I'm taking out the personal loan is because I have X amount of money, but I want to keep that X amount of money free to do business with. So the money that I'm taking is going right towards paying my debts. I'm taking the money from you and paying and sending it right to the credit card company. But on the other hand, I have other money that's tied up in other places. I got money in stocks, I got money in whatever other investments I have. So I don't want to take my money out of those investments to pay off my credit card debt. So I want to borrow $5,000 from you to do that. So can you stretch that and call that this money that I'm borrowing from you is also like a shtickle business investment, because it's freeing my other money. It's enabling me to invest in other money to make profit off of that money. So some folks can make on that also. That if you can any way, shape, or form stretch it, that it's considered to be a business investment, so that would be okay. That's already a shy, just how far one can do in terms of that. But again, the basic idea being that we want to keep the Heter Iska as limited as possible in terms of business, because we don't want it to become that it's such a farce that it undermines the entire validity of what the Heter Iska is all about. There is another common shaila in terms of Heter Iskas, and that's a term that started in Europe not that long ago. It was called the Heter Iska Klali. So Heter Iska Klali is addressing the following issue. So if a classic Heter Iska that was originally practiced was, I have a specific loan I want to take out, I want to borrow $10,000 from you, so I come to you, we sit down, we 500 years ago we go online, we print out the Heter Iska form where you get an Eidim, whatever, but you don't really need Eidim, we sign it and show it, and it says black on white, this is for the purpose of buying the following property and investing in the following business, everything is showing. It's a regular business transaction. So that's all fine and dandy when you have one guy who's buying one-time shot from another person. But what if you have somebody, he's constantly buying, every day, every 5 minutes, he's running a mortgage company, every 5 minutes he's borrowing and lending, and everything is back and forth. So every time he's going to sit down with each one of his clients and write out another Heter Iska, every time he's going to take another dollar from them, every time he's going to go print out another shtar off the, it's not shaykh to do that. So can you make the following? Can you write one big atars nadarm? That just as like an Erev Hashanah, we say, really, the umitzad adin, I'm really supposed to be poured as a neder, I'm supposed to really spell out which neder I'm taking, but ki rabim heim, there's so many, it's such a tircha to do it, ki ilu isi portam, so it's ki ilu I specified which ones. So can you pull the same kind of a trick when it comes to Heter Iskas? So I'll sit down on the, when I open up my company, and I'll write out a document that hereby saying that all money that's going to be transferring in all hands in his business, everything should be done al pi Heter Iska, according to the Nusuch and the Beis Din of America. Can you write such a thing? And then you'll be covered, Liolim Vod. Is such a stunt going to be acceptable? So this was a big machlekes haposkim. So there are some poskim who were adamantly opposed against it. That's just mamash a farce. They said, that's not a Heter Iska. That's it's not a game. That doesn't mean anything. The other guy doesn't even know about that Heter Iska. The whole thing is a joke. And other poskim defended this practice. Other poskim said that, yeah, that's okay. That even though it's a one-time thing and it doesn't spell out exactly who's being made and how much money is being made, everything, it should just every time when you enter into any agreement with anybody, into any business deal, you just make a note on the bottom that says that this entire transaction should be done al pi Heter Iska that we wrote up 20 years ago. So some poskim were making on that. So a lot of people in Europe already, people were making on this. This was a big hot issue in Europe, whether one could be making on this or not. And the minigis that in many places became making on this Heter Iska Klali.
Same mouth.
What? Yeah, so that's a problem. The problem is, how do you get around that technical problem? So what the Poskim say to do is as follows. The only time that you technically need a dollar is only when the split is mamish 50-50. What if I give the recipient of the quote-unquote loan of the Iska, I give him a little bit more than 50%? So then I'll give him 51% instead of 50%. So then that extra percent will be, that'll be his schar pe'ul instead of the dollar. That's what some, in the end, it's not going to make the slightest difference, because he's not going to get the profit anyway. It's all going to be given back depending on what the number that we put in percent was anyway. So I think when they write a Heter Iska Klali, they write in 55 to 45. So that way we don't have to bother with the dollar each time.
What's
Again, so assuming that this heter iska klali works, so then one would be able to rely on this. The poskim are a little bit more makil when you have, not as individuals who are relying on the skula, when you have, let's take a bank, you have a Jewish-owned bank, so the poskim are more makil that the Jewish-owned bank would be permitted to rely on these heter iska klalis for the following reason, that one of the chesronos of the heter iska klali is that the guy who's entering into the agreement may not even know what he's getting himself into. There's a long, you came to buy $1,000, so we fill out this form, and it says there's a teeny, teeny line on the bottom, everything should be done according to the heter iska klali. So the guy doesn't even know what the words mean. He has no clue. So that's a little bit of a problem. But on a bank form, so when you take out a loan from a bank, you do any business with a bank, there are 50 million other things that you don't understand what it means. There's the fine print. Nobody reads the fine print. So it's understood when you're going into a real professional type of a contract. So it's understood you're going to be bound by it. You're going to go tell the guy afterwards, no, I didn't read what it said. I had an issue with a bank a couple of years ago. I noticed after a while, they kept on deducting everything. Every month I saw there was another $5 taken off my savings account. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I called them up, and they said, I'll tell you what the problem was. It was an old savings account from when I was a kid, and it had dipped below $500 or something. It was like $200 left in the account. So it said in the fine print somewhere that if the savings goes below $500, so they're going to take off $5 as a service fee. So go figure. I never bothered reading that line, so I didn't know. So I couldn't figure out why I was losing my money. At that point, there was nothing left. So there was so I said to the person in the bank, I said, I was very naive. I said, but I didn't know that. I didn't. So they said, I don't care whether you knew that or not. I said, we send you a statement every month that says it in the fine print. I said, but who reads the fine print? So they said to me, I said, I mean, who reads the fine print? Who cares who reads the fine print? It says in the fine print, your problem, not my problem. I remember the first time when I was, I didn't really win the case. I lost my money. I remember when I was the first time I ever went to, years ago, I once went to rent a car. So it was the first time I ever went to go rent a car. So I'm standing there, and the guy gives me a contract a mile long of every single nuance that could possibly have in the car. It'll blow up the car, it'll end up in China, whatever could happen, and you sign a dotted line. So I said to him, wait, before I sign, I just want to read. I want to make sure I understand everything that I'm reading. So I started to read. So I'm standing there for 5 minutes, reading, couldn't barely understand what the terms that I was reading. And then he says to me, okay, you finished? Because I have another 6 pages for you to read also. So he said to me, nobody reads this, just sign on the dotted line. I said, okay, fine. So that's what the poskim say. They quote that svar when it comes to banks at the risk, because they say that everybody knows that when you borrow money from a bank, so you're going to be stuck by all the laws of the bank, whether you like it or not. So if it says in the line, if it says in the fine print that this everything is being done up at the risk, so then you're stuck by that also. So you didn't know about it. That's your problem. You should have sat for an hour and read the fine print. So that's what a lot of these places... A lot of the banks in Eretz Yisrael, all the banks in Eretz Yisrael, rely on these heter iska klolis. They don't sit down with every time you come in tomorrow, take out a loan. They're not going to sit and explain to you what a heter iska is. It says in the fine print that you're relying on their heter iska klali. It should at least be made aware to people. You should at least have a sign. You should have something that the other person knows that is getting into heter iska. If you go into the money changers, and from money changers in Eretz Yisrael, so there's a big sign there that says, all of our transactions are called ourselves be heter iska, shalavadat, shalavadat, shalavadat. So whoever wants to find out what that means, so should ask them, and they'll show you what their documents are. But they're all relying on this heter iska klali. So again, there are definitely mekilim in this area.
Right.
Right. I think so. According to what we said in the past, according to Rav Moshe, if it's the bank that's actually borrowing the money, that's much less of a problem. You may not even need a heter iska, according to Rav Moshe. But in Eretz Yisrael, they don't like to rely on that. In Eretz Yisrael, they're machm like the other poskim that everything needs a heter iska. So again, so a lot of these kinds of like chavos that over the last couple of months that we've been speaking about, all the shilohs that have come up about this one lending his son, this one lending his father, this one lending it, those kinds of loans are a little bit shaky to start to use heter iskas, because these are a lot of them are not really business loans. So if they're not real business loans, one should really try to avoid these heter iskas. If they are business loans, then okay, then Rechanami. So then those who want to rely on heter iska can rely on heter iska. The Chavetz Chaim points out that people don't realize that even though they rely on heter iskas, meikra didn't work, but it loses out the opportunity to really lend somebody money. Kesef Talves Amis, there's a mitzvah the Araisa to lend people money, not to make money off of them, just to be a nice guy. So if a person has the ability, a person doesn't, he doesn't, but if he has the ability to lend a person money for free without any of these kunzim, so that's a wonderful mitzvah. That's the more correct thing to do. But if a person doesn't have the ability to do that, and he wants to make sure that his money is safe, so then the only way to do it, we'd have to follow in these different nuances of Etrusk that we spoke about. Any suggestions? I think we're pretty much done with Ribbis. So any suggestions for the next topic? We don't have that many more weeks. It's a handful of weeks till the end. No? No ideas? Okay. We'll think of something.
So, Mishat Yosher, if you want to deposit money in a bank, should you preferentially go to a Goyish bank? Or should you preferentially go to...
I mean, if you're depositing money in the bank,
I mean, they're going to give you whatever, 1%, 2%.